Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome. It's another day older and deeper into the mire of media bias. I'm back from a long drive back and forth to Wisconsin to see mom and dad and some siblings and eat cheese curds and go to the Mars Cheese Castle in Kenosha. I bought a jar of Stormin Gorman Thomas barbecue sauce. So my thanks to Nick Night Train Fodicaro and Curtis Houck for filling in. While I was out, I was reading the old La Crosse Tribune. We always got that daily when I was growing up. It's now 3 days a week. It's a very thin paper now. I think the whole thing feels like it's about 16 pages. But what I remembered was a lot of people across the fruited plain who are buying a local newspaper are getting a lot of their national news from AP, from the Associated Publicists. On the drive back, I was up on Cabela Drive in the panhandle of West Virginia on I-70, and I bought a paper. It was the Observer reporter of nearby Washington, Pennsylvania. They got a cool minor league baseball team called the Washington Wild Things. That could be the new name for the Redskins. That'd be fun. Anyway, on the top of the paper in Washington, Pennsylvania, all eyes turn to Buttigieg. In the online, the headline was, Buttigieg's star rises as $1 trillion Biden agenda shifts toward him. This story somehow required three AP reporters, Hope Yen, Tom Beaumont, and Josh Boak. Dateline Washington. Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary who holds the purse strings to much of President Joe Biden's $1 trillion infrastructure package, was holding forth with reporters on its impact, the promise of more electric cars, intercity train routes, bigger airports, when a pointed question came. How would he go about building racial equity into infrastructure? And there, in the first two paragraphs, you get the liberal media in action. They're all palling around with Pete Buttigieg, letting him speak profoundly about infrastructure, and then they had to talk about racism. This is all good for Mayor Pete. It continues. The 39-year-old former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and 2020 Democratic presidential candidate laid out his argument that highway design can reflect racism, noting that at least $1 billion in the new bill will help reconnect cities and neighborhoods that had been racially segregated or divided by road projects. All right, if I was a reporter there, I might ask the question, if we have racially segregated neighborhoods by highway, and the Obama administration had a huge infrastructure package that they passed with the Democrats back in 2009, how come highway racism hasn't been solved already? Apparently no one asked that. AP doesn't recommend that this was something that was suggested. Then Pete responds, I'm still surprised that some people were surprised when I pointed to the fact that if a highway was built for the purpose of dividing a white and a black neighborhood, that obviously reflects racism. Yes, this is the press release from the Associated Publicists on the front page of the paper. Now, I don't know if the Washington, Pennsylvania Observer Reporter is a Democrat newspaper. You can turn to the editorial page on Monday, and you don't really get a sense. There's a couple of sort of newsy analysis type articles on the editorial page, so it's not like, this doesn't read like the Washington Post editorial page. But this is basically a front page press release for Pete Buttigieg. That was what was on the front page. Then we turn the page for more from the race beat. The trio of AP reporters. Racial equity is an issue where Democratic priorities and Buttigieg's future align. One of his greatest shortcomings as a White House candidate was his inability to win over black voters. Now he navigates that heading into the 2022 midterms, will probably shape the fortunes of Biden's agenda and the Democratic Party, if not his own prospects. How he navigates race is very important because, as we know, many presidents have leaped from being Secretary of Transportation to the White House. That's surely happened before. No, but maybe this time. I mean, all the palaver right now in Washington was somehow that Pete Buttigieg was now contending with Kamala Harris in the who's the heir apparent. Kamala Harris is out. Maybe Mayor Pete is in. That might be influencing. Fluffy AP reports. And then there was a paragraph or two with an opposing point of view. You know why? Because the word pounced appears. Republicans seeking to exploit the issue pounced on Buttigieg's words. Oh, yes. The Democrats weren't seeking to exploit the issue of racism. They never do that, do they? I heard some stuff, some weird stuff from the Secretary of Transportation trying to make this about social issues, said Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. To me, a road's a road. Texas Senator Ted Cruz tweeted sarcastically, "The roads are racist. We must get rid of roads." And that is the Republican portion of this long article. There you got one paragraph of sarcasm. Better than none. And then we get back to heroic Pete. But Buttigieg didn't engage and was off to his next stop, the climate summit in Scotland. There he stood for almost a dozen interviews as he promoted provisions of Biden's bill that would build a network of electric vehicle charging stations. He also engaged with young climate activists and took photos with former President Barack Obama. On racism in roadways, he said simply, "I don't know who it hurts to acknowledge that harm was done and to propose doing something to fix it." How nice. Here again, they have that right next to Obama, and they can't say somehow Obama failed to fix the racist roads. Also on the cover of the Washington Observer Reporter newspaper on Monday, I was sitting having a nice frozen mocha from Sheetz. Sheetz with a Z. If you're not from this part of the country, it's like Quick Trip to Wisconsinites. And I had a frozen mocha with peanut butter and banana. Makes my wife want to throw up, but I loved it. Anyway, so I'm reading the paper. In gun debate, Rittenhouse verdict unlikely to be last word, by Sarah Burnett of AP. Now, the part of this that's on the front page, pretty straightforward, pretty fair and balanced. It takes a turn later, but they're sort of describing the two sides in this analysis on the front page. Sarah Burnett, after a roughly two-week trial, a jury will soon deliberate whether Rittenhouse is guilty of charges, including murder, that could send him to prison for life. Was the then 17-year-old forced to act in self-defense while trying to deter crime, as he and his defense attorney say? Or did Rittenhouse, the only person in a well-armed crowd to shoot anyone, provoke people with his weapon, instigating the bloodshed, as prosecutors argue? It's a similar debate to what has played out across the country around the use of guns, particularly at protests like the one in Kenosha over the shooting of Jacob Blake, a black man, by a white police officer, or in other cities over pandemic-related restrictions. And we won't mention Jacob Blake brandishing a knife because that's not important. In Rittenhouse, some see a patriot defending an American city from destruction when police were unwilling or too overwhelmed to do so. Others see an irresponsible kid in over his head, enamored with brandishing a firearm, or someone looking for trouble or people to shoot. So you're getting both sides on the front page. Then there is inside, Burnett quotes from Richie McGinnis, the chief video director for the Daily Caller, described as a conservative website. You know, that's accurate, but AP and other liberal media outlets have this habit. Newsbusters is a conservative website. The Daily Caller is a conservative website. Black Lives Matter doesn't get a label. Antifa, are they ideological? They're racial justice groups, I guess. We are conservatives? Yeah, that's correct. But let's look for the word liberal or leftist or even their favorite, progressive. They're a little slow with the labels. I've been documenting that since my first year in 1989 at the old Media Research Center. Anyway, actually, Richie McGinnis didn't have an actual quote. They just sort of described that Richie sensed something bad can happen. Yeah, generally in writing, something bad could happen. Now, maybe to the AP and the other media outlets, burning down the store, that's not something bad could happen. It's when somebody gets shot. Well, that is something bad. But the whole thing was a riot. It was actually interesting. The story actually notes that there was a lot of armed people there. Now, some idiots on Twitter were trying to say somehow that Rittenhouse was like, they pretended he was the only guy with a gun on the scene, when this is obviously not the case at all. The AP story is correct about that, lays it down. But, you know, then the liberal chunk of the article came, the last six paragraphs, actually. Out came the sociology professor and the so-called gun safety advocate. We will not describe the academic and the advocate as liberals or leftists. For a lot of people, Rittenhouse is the face of gun owners in America, said David Yamani, a sociology professor at Wake Forest University who studies gun culture. Now, you know that a professor who studies gun culture thinks it's like, you know, Margaret Mead studying the savages of color. You know what I mean? I read Margaret Mead in college. We're going to see the strange savages who wear their baseball hats backwards and like AR-15s. Yes, Yamani said Rittenhouse is not the face of gun owners in America. In Kenosha, the more typical gun owner was the father who took weapons out of a safe amid unrest. They like that word. Sounds better than riots and looting. Unrest. The face could have been Gage Grosskreutz, the one that Rittenhouse shot in the arm. He carried a concealed pistol as a matter of course. They continue. And while Rittenhouse's core supporters believe he did nothing wrong from start to finish, okay, that's sort of a narrow opinion to say he did nothing wrong. A much larger group of gun owners are somewhere in between, Yamani said. While they support Rittenhouse's right to defend himself at the moment, they also think he had no business being there and that two people died and one person was injured for no good reason. Well, look, there's a lot of us who would say it was probably not a good idea for a 17-year-old kid with a rifle to be there in the middle of a riot. Any of us who've had a 17-year-old son would say that was a bad idea. I didn't let my boy Ben pack heat when he was 17. He has a gun now, though. Keep it in the drawer, boy. Anyway, they set this up so that most gun owners sort of agree with AP and the sociologist. Isn't that nice? Then it continues. Former gun industry executive Ryan Bussey, now senior policy advisor to the gun safety group Giffords, as in Gabby Giffords, the NRA haters. No label, notice that. Nobody calls them liberal. Nobody even calls them gun control. They're a gun safety group. The NRA somehow, despite teaching gun safety, is not a gun safety group. Ryan Bussey calls Rittenhouse the avatar of a customer the NRA and gun companies have been appealing to, including by marketing and selling products with names like the Ultimate Arms Warmonger. Yeah, now we're getting to where the AP wants to go. Rittenhouse is the avatar of a bunch of nuts who like buying guns and using the word warmonger for fun. And the story finishes, among much of society, whether Rittenhouse is guilty or not guilty won't change anyone's mind about guns, Ryan Bussey said. What's dangerous is he's going to become a mascot or a martyr, Bussey added. This is the last line of the story. Bussey, every time there's a Rittenhouse, it moves the window of what's acceptable. I think Rittenhouse has moved the window. So, according to the Associated Press, the thought they want to leave you with is that defending yourself in a riot is moving the window of what's acceptable. Hey, Ryan Bussey, maybe rioting and burning down stores and houses is what should not be acceptable, dummy.
You suck, you jackass.
Hey, by the way, just a quick thought. Have you seen this on Twitter? Democrat Tennessee State Representative Gloria Johnson of Knoxville tweeted that the phrase, let's go Brandon, should be equated with burning the flag. Speaking of dummies. Now, can you imagine? One of the things those of us who weren't supremely happy about Donald Trump and everything he did would never say that if you said Tuck Frump, that it was like flag burning. The president is not the flag. I don't know why that's even hard. This reminds me of the column this week. Sometimes you have deep thoughts. Well, maybe they're not so deep. You'll have to decide for yourself. While you're driving across the country, I've wanted to write for a while now about the Steele dossier. And while I was gone, the Steele dossier really was crumbling. Prosecutor John Durham at the Justice Department indicted Igor Danchenko, who is a Russian expert at the Brookings Institution, connected to the Democrats. He worked with a guy named Charles Dolan, who was a Clinton flunky. It becomes quite obvious that large chunks of the Steele dossier came from Clinton flunkies. So somehow the Clinton campaign was paying a Fusion GPS, who paid a British spy to get Russian dirt on Trump from another Democrat. I mean, the whole idea that this sort of quote-unquote evidence inspired years of media stories, heavy-breathing media stories about Russian collusion. Rich Noyes counted till the end of the Mueller report 2,634 minutes of Russian collusion coverage, most of it badly sourced speculation and gossip, conspiracy theories. Well, now, you know, Igor Danchenko gets indicted, network coverage zero. Now we're getting corrections and retractions in stories in like the Washington Post, but guess what? Nobody's going to click on those stories again. There might be one headline that you added something, but nobody's going to probably read those stories unless they're doing a term paper. In his Reliable Sources newsletter, CNN's Brian Stelter quoted media critic Dan Kennedy claiming, the media reported in real time that the Steele dossier was unvetted and likely contained many falsehoods. No, that's not what Brian Stelter said. That's not what CNN said. CNN ran around saying much of this has been confirmed or is yet to be rejected. They defended the Steele dossier. That they didn't run around on CNN saying, oh, most of it's unvetted and likely has a lot of lies in it. No, the facts first people were very pro-dossier. Go back to 2017. If you dig into the video, you're going to find a lot of junk. Yes, Stelter also quoted Howard Fineman, formerly of Newsweek, insisting the dossier was widely viewed as fishy. Well, look, it's a little late. It's a little late after 2,634 minutes of stories to now say, gee, now that Trump is no longer in office, we'll acknowledge that our reporting wasn't very good. This happens a lot. Usually when you want to see somebody admit that their narrative against a Republican was bad, it comes after the Republican is removed. That's kind of the way they do things. Well, it's safe now. We can admit we did something that was not so great. Now, Stelter's not the type that ever really wants to admit error. He thinks that allows the Republicans to pounce. It allows them to claim the news media is fake. Well, Russian collusion was fake, Brian. And so the networks were downplaying or skipping all this Steele dossier collapsing. Meanwhile, back to heavy breathing on the Trump scandals. Yeah, the point I was trying to make was, it seems like the political news is more like the weather, and it doesn't really matter what the facts are. What matters is every day the negative thumping the tub against Trump. And that's what's going on with the January 6th committee. Everything the January 6th committee does is the most urgent news on the networks, and certainly on CNN, which you could, at this point, you could just call them 1-6-NN. Now, January 6th was one terrible afternoon, but now the Democrats are clearly pouncing. They're clearly seeking to exploit the issue the way Terry McAuliffe tried to do in the Virginia governor's race. Might not turn out, but CNN is there to give it the old college try 24/7. It just bothers me that it doesn't actually matter what the January 6th committee, organized by Nancy Pelosi, who rejected the Republican nominees for the committee, and then she picked Liz Cheney, because Liz Cheney will reliably act just like the Democrats on this issue. It doesn't matter what the committee actually finds. It doesn't matter what they'll say in their final report. All that seems to matter is that this assembly line continues, that always the Republicans are going to look like somehow they're a bunch of insurrectionists and criminals. This reminds me of what I read in La Crosse in the paper. There was an article about Steve Bannon being indicted by the Department of Justice. And suddenly, according to AP, the Department of Justice under Biden and this Democrat-stacked January 6th committee are somehow nonpartisan actors. That's the way when you read the story, it's the way it sounds. Dateline Washington. Steve Bannon, a longtime ally, a former President Donald Trump, was indicted Friday on two counts of criminal contempt of Congress after he defied a subpoena from the House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The indictment comes after a parade of Trump administration officials, including Bannon, have defied requests and demands from Congress over the past 5 years with little consequence, including during Democrats' impeachment inquiry. Well, which one? There were two. I mean, obviously, they mean the second one. And then there's just this tiny sentence of balance. President Barack Obama's administration also declined to charge two of its officials who defied congressional demands. That would be the Attorney General, Eric Holder, and Lois Lerner of the IRS. AP quotes, Attorney General Merrick Garland said Bannon's indictment reflects the Justice Department's steadfast commitment to the rule of law. Yeah, see? Press release. Now, Merrick Garland can be allowed to say that, I suppose. That's news. But this is the way the story is framed. Steadfast commitment to the rule of law means sticking it to Bannon. Steadfast commitment to the rule of law never meant sticking it to Hillary Clinton. That would be wrong. That would be partisan. Sticking it to Republicans is justice. Sticking it to Democrats is politics. Meanwhile, in the paper, you know, Biden is getting these AP stories like this one. Headline, Biden bill would give local news outlets shot in the arm. Quote, shot in the arm, unquote. Dateline Washington. President Joe Biden's $1.85 trillion social spending bill includes a provision that, if it becomes law, would mark the first time the federal government has offered targeted support in response to the decline of local news. This is a payroll tax credit for companies who employ eligible local journalists. Now, at least the AP reporter in the story says this does create some tension for the industry. Some top Republicans in Congress have derided it as a handout. Well, when you hand out federal dollars, and we know Democrats see tax credits as spending, derided it as a handout. Well, it's a handout. That's what it is. It's a handout to local news companies who cover local members of Congress. How convenient. Yes, leading journalists also acknowledge it's awkward to receive financial assistance from a government they cover independently. Yeah, no, they don't. You're not covering the government independently when they're handing you cash. AP says, still, given the sense of crisis the media industry is facing, some journalists say the risk is worth it. Yeah, of course they do. And of course they go to Stephen Waldman, president and co-founder of Report for America, an organization that places journalists in local newsrooms, including the Associated Press. Well, Stephen Waldman was a longtime reporter for Newsweek, who, of course, joined the Obama administration as a publicist. That is, you know, so Stephen Waldman can see the sense of having Democrats pay their Democrats in the media so they can favorably cover Democrats. Waldman says most journalists start off with a healthy skepticism about government getting involved and helping journalism. And that's appropriate. Well, look, this is our problem with the news media. We've already seen it. With the millions and millions of dollars that go to PBS and National Public Radio. What you get with federal support is journalists who say, well, we know which party is going to come through in getting us the buku bucks. And we know which party wants to defund NPR and PBS because government shouldn't be involved in journalism. Those libertarian types are inherently suspicious. They're the ones we need to report skeptically on. Now, the socialists, like Bernie Sanders and AOC, who are going to come to us and give us lots of money, well, they shall be reported non-ideologically. They're climate activists and for racial justice. They're trying to solve racism in highways like Pete Buttigieg. This is subsidized media corruption. That's what it is. And we're going to call it out here just like we do. It's my bugaboo, PBS and NPR. We're going to call it out here at Newsbusters. That's what you come for. Come to us once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for checking in.